Welcome to the NFL Fantasy Football Show, presented by DraftKings. Here's your host, Marcus Grant.
What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Show, presented by DraftKings. It's me, your man, MD Marcus Grant, still masking and socially distancing when and where necessary. And we are into week 15. We've had one game in the books. We will talk about that one, an interesting one, between the Chargers and the Raiders from Las Vegas last night. Michael F. Florio will join us, as he always does on a Friday. We'll break that game down. I will ask some of the big questions of the week, including Russell Wilson versus Mitchell Trubisky and a whole lot of other things. Plus, we will talk to our resident nerd and ask him about some of the best single game fantasy playoff performances. There should be an interesting list of names for that one. So we got plenty to do on this Friday show. But before we do any of that, we'll talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy Esquire. And Murph, normally I have a question for you every week or every day that we do this show. But I know you have a big announcement today. So I will stand back and kind of, let you announce your news.
Yeah, thanks. This is my last NFL fantasy football podcast. Unfortunately, I've accepted another job elsewhere, so taking my talents with another place. But let me just say, working with you and the whole group of fantasy for the last, I think, would be almost three seasons is incredible to see where it came from. I don't even think that we had tweets coming out to promote the show, and now we have a digital show streaming three times a week, and we're on Twitter and Instagram, and you guys are all over the network, and it's just been amazing to see how it's transformed and become this awesome program to work for. And obviously going from way back with Fabs to Graham, and now we get to work with Rank and Kimmy and Michael we're working with today, who I can't speak highly enough about. I mean, it's just been awesome. It's been an A+ time, and to you especially, Marcus, all the memories we've had, whether it's from Combine and live shows at restaurants and just back in the old studio, I can't say enough good things. So I really appreciate my time here, and thank you and everyone else for everything they've done for me.
You know what? One of the constants of this show has been change. I guess along those lines, you have been one of the steadying presences here. And I certainly I appreciate you being here and all the work you've put in here. And you have been as big a creative part of this show as anybody. I mean, you talk about us not having tweets and promotions. And I know you have been a big part of us, getting more video out, getting more promotion out on this show. So I wish you the best. We're sad that you're not going to be here for us going forward. But I know that whatever you do, it's going to be great. And we will certainly be following along. And Florian and I said before the show, we're still going to follow you on Twitter for food recommendations, if nothing else. So I wish you the best. Tell Sheck we said hello, and good luck, man, with whatever you're going to do.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And yes, I mean, we're always going to stay in contact, you, me, Mike. We'll always be on social media messing around with each other. So, of course. I've been grateful to be a part of this and help build this awesome thing. And even with me gone, what you guys have going right now is just it's awesome. And I'm proud of you and everyone else that works on this stuff. And I'm excited to see where it keeps leading to in 2021.
Cool. Hey, well, I appreciate it. And we definitely will certainly be in touch. All right. Let's bring in our pal, Michael F. Florio, who joins us every Friday on this show. And an interesting one in Las Vegas. I know we will probably talk. We are going to talk about Keenan Allen and maybe a little bit of Austin Eckler. But just kind of off the top, did you have either one of those guys started in any leagues last night?
I had Austin Eckler started. He has been my guy all season long, and I thought he was going to have a really big game last night. If you told me that Keenan Allen was going to play less than half the snaps, Mike Williams was going to barely be a factor at all, I was thinking, I kept joking that Austin Eckler was going to get infinite targets, and I tweeted out yesterday, 30-target game incoming, and a lot of people were angry after the fact. I was truly expecting 30 targets for Austin Eckler, but I definitely started him and felt a little disappointed, not even because the lack of passes, that was one thing, but Marcus, This guy is your best offensive weapon if Keenan Allen's not on the field. I think no questions asked. Then you get near the goal line and you don't even give him a chance. You just pull him off for Kalen Ballage. Like, what is going on, man?
That was the biggest head scratcher of the night, was Kalen Ballage getting the goal line opportunities. And then Justin Herbert just taking in the game winner himself. Although he fumbled it once and then there was questions whether he got it. It was a whole thing. But we'll talk
very
about.
He still thought he was in.
I thought he was in too. But you know, they have to look at it several times, and they finally decided, let's just go home and give the Chargers the win. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. But first, let's dive into some fantasy headlines here. Starting with one that came out this morning, that Drew Brees is going to be the starter for the Saints against the Kansas City Chiefs in Week 15. Now, I read some reports that the Saints team, all the players, they've known this since Monday, and it has been kept under a very tight lid in New Orleans, obviously for strategic reasons, right? You don't want the Chiefs to start preparing for Drew Brees because he is a very different quarterback than Taysom Hill. So now all of a sudden it's Friday, and if you are Andy Reid, you do have to sort of change course a little bit. As for Brees himself, missed about a month with rib and lung injuries, but is going to get back for what is on paper, Florio, a kind of tough matchup. So would you consider starting Brees this week if you had him?
So because of the matchup, I had Taysom Hill as my QB14, and that felt kind of low, but it's just a good week for quarterbacks, right? Like, to me, there's at least 15 quarterbacks that I would feel 100% confident starting this week when I thought it was going to be Taysom Hill. But I think with Drew Brees, I'm going to slide him in either around QB 14 or 15, debating who I like more between him or Tom Brady. But like you said, Marcus, on paper, this is a tough matchup. Brees is coming off of a pretty serious injury, and I'm a little bit scared. Like, if he takes another hard hit, could we see him come out? Will we see more Taysom Hill involved? Because Taysom Hill did play pretty well in Drew Brees' absence. So I won't have him in my top 12, but he will be in my like top 15. I'm just debating between him or Brady right now to be to go ahead of the other.
I think that's fair. I think he's, you know, I don't know that I'd rush him back and make him my QB1 if I had other options. I think there are a lot of guys out there that are worth a stream, and we may get to some of them over the course of this show. But I think for me, the bigger issue is, what does this mean for the guys around him? And, you know, we've talked for the last few weeks about Taysom Hill sort of being an anchor a little bit on the fantasy production for Michael Thomas, for Alvin Kamara, for those sorts of guys. Now that it looks like Drew Brees is going to be back, are you feeling better about starting Kamara and Michael Thomas and, you know, say, Jared Cook or Emmanuel Sanders, any of those other guys?
Yeah, I definitely am. I think Alvin Kamara is the biggest winner, because even it was great to see him getting involved in the passing game last week with Taysom Hill. But I mean, he's a different beast with Drew Brees. He averaged over 27 fantasy points per game this year with Brees, and just 14 with Taysom Hill. The targets are more than double, nearly 9 per game with Brees and just 4 per game on average with Taysom Hill. So I think he is the biggest winner. But then I do think all of the pass catchers get a boost here, because Brees is the better thrower of the football than Taysom Hill, and he is also much older and much, much less mobile. So you're not going to have him, you know, design runs for Drew Brees. You're not going to have him, when he starts feeling pressure, rolling out and looking to pick up yards with his legs. Instead, he's going to be looking to get rid of the ball very quickly on a slant route to Michael Thomas or dump off to Alvin Kamara. We could see Emmanuel Sanders or Jared Cook also get more involved. I think it's a trending up arrow for all of the Saints pass catchers. Although I do think I like Taysom Hill more for fantasy than Drew Brees.
In terms of like the actual quarterback position, yeah, I think Taysom Hill is a better option, just because he does give you that rushing floor and he is likely to score a rushing touchdown or two. I do think the biggest difference for Kamara and for Michael Thomas, I think to that extent, is when they get inside the 10 and certainly inside the 5, Brees is more likely to distribute the ball. You're not going to see him run an RPO and keep it and try to scramble 5 yards for a touchdown. He's going to give that ball to Kamara, or he is going to throw that quick slant to Michael Thomas and try to get the ball out that way. So anybody who has survived this, first off, if you've had Michael Thomas and you've survived this long, you have figured out how to sort of maneuver without him, because you've had to do it for so much of the year. And anybody who has survived this long with Alvin Kamara, you are feeling great, because here you are getting him back. in what is likely your playoff semifinals. So this is great news for them. Anybody who had been sort of leaning on Taysom Hill, maybe you're a little bit disappointed, but then again, if you have Taysom Hill, you probably also have another quarterback that you could put into that slot and figure out what to do this week, especially because I think you might have been wavering anyway against the Chiefs just because of the matchup, but we'll see what happens. It should be at least an interesting game. I think it has made the game a little more intriguing now that you've got Breeze versus Mahomes. Not to say that Taysom Hill has played poorly, but you know, he's not the marquee guy that Drew Breeze is when it comes to promoting the game. Elsewhere in the division, Ronald Jones went on the COVID list, which kind of a weird series of events, right? He fractures his pinky finger, then he gets surgery to put a pin in it. And then I think the next day announced that he was on the COVID-19 reserve list. So there's a very good chance he's probably not going to play. Reports are that Leonard Fournette is slated to be the lead back. Maybe we see some, you know, Keyshawn Vaughn. I don't know. Maybe we see somebody else, some Shady McCoy back there possibly. Who knows? But with Fournette, is he worth putting in a lineup? If you've got him, if he's somehow on waivers, is he worth slotting in against the Falcons?
I have him as like a low-end RB2. I will fully admit I gave some bad advice earlier this week. I said you can drop Leonard Fournette, and then it came out that Ronald Jones – because I wasn't even worried about the pinky. I know people were like, oh, Chris Godwin missed a game with this injury, but it's a lot different for a running back with a pinky injury than a wide receiver, especially a running back like Ronald Jones, who you can still run him plenty but don't have to really throw him the ball a whole bunch. But then with the COVID news, that completely changed everything. But I don't think enough people realize just like how good the Falcons defense has been against the run this year. They're in the bottom five. So I don't love the matchup for him, especially because my thinking is Leonard Fournette was inactive last week for a reason. I think he lost the pass catching job that was once his this year, because remember, he had a game with a lot of drops. I believe he had a fumble loss, and then he was inactive. And we saw LeSean McCoy starting to get used and Keyshawn Vaughn, like you said. So I think he has a safe enough floor where if he's getting enough volume, he can be in a low-end RB2. You hope that he gets a touchdown. But if there's anyone getting more excited than that, I'm not with them. I don't think his ceiling is super high this week.
I don't think his ceiling is high at all this week, in part because of what you mentioned about the Falcons' run defense, which I think it's one of those sneaky stats that I don't know that – at least I'll say that I didn't really pay attention to until maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. When I started looking around, I'm like, wait, the Falcons – are a lot tougher against running backs than you would think, because we went so long this season saying start everybody against Atlanta. And so that certainly concerns me a little bit. And the fact that that Fournette has not been as effective as a pass catcher recently, as you mentioned, him being a healthy scratch last week, is a big, big red flag. So I would probably look outside of the Tampa backfield if I needed running back help this week. But if you have Fournette, if you're in a pinch, start him, because he's going to get probably the majority of the snaps and probably, you know, more than half of the touches going his way. We'll see how it goes, but I don't expect a big thing from him at all. All right, now in last night's game, Derek Carr went out in the first quarter with an apparent groin injury. He was trying to kind of scramble out of trouble, and all of a sudden you felt it. You saw him reach down and limped off the field, did not come back for the rest of the game. Marcus Mariota stepped in, played great. Very nearly helped the Raiders win that game in overtime. And now after the game, reports are, this is per John Gruden, that it is a significant groin injury for Derek Carr, which means he certainly doesn't seem likely to play in week 16. And his season very well may be over, especially with the Raiders very close to being eliminated from playoff contention. But assuming it is Marcus Mariota next week in a game against Tua Tagovailoa, would you consider putting Mariota in a DFS line? I'm not going to say you're going to start him in season long, right? Not with your fantasy championship on the line in week 16 against that Dolphin defense. I wouldn't advocate that in any way. But say DFS, if you wanted to get a little frisky, would you consider Mariota?
Yeah, I think that's the perfect spot to use Mariota, especially in more of like a tournament rather than a cash game, because I don't expect him to be like super highly rostered in DFS. And we saw last night, like, he still has that rushing upside. He rushed for 88 yards and a touchdown. Like, that is massive. There's a reason why Lamar Jackson is so great in fantasy, even though he doesn't, like, he routinely throws for under 200 yards. Jalen Hurts last week threw for less than 200 yards and only one touchdown, and he had a really good fantasy day because these quarterbacks that can run are cheat codes. We say it all the time, Marcus, and Mariota, you could say what you want about him from his days in Tennessee. The one thing he always had, though, was the ability to run. So I think and that is the perfect format to use him. But Marcus, is there anything worse than the opponent that I would have played if Lamar Jackson didn't put up his season high last week and eliminate me had Keenan Allen and Derek Carr in their starting lineup this week. So I am just sitting here super salty this morning.
What might have been,
you know? Preach it to the championship. That's what it would have been.
Man, if things had worked out differently, who really knows? But Mariota, I think, is an interesting – I think, you know, it's definitely an interesting play next week. But like I said, in season long – you're not going to do it. You're talking week 16. It is fantasy Super Bowl week. I can't, in good conscience, suggest that you do that. But I do think in a tournament setup, he could be a very, very interesting play. Why not? Just throw it in there. See what happens. Maybe lightning strikes again, and you end up having a pretty good day from him. That leads us, though, perfectly into our recap of Thursday Night Football. It was the Chargers getting a 30-27 win over the Raiders in overtime in a game that, especially in the fourth quarter and overtime, was just completely bonkers. It was the sort of bananas type ending I expected the week before from the Falcons and Chargers. And that one was like, it was okay. This one was just sort of wild. Yet, you know, trading, turnovers and missed field goals and weird play calling and all of that. Finally, before Justin Herbert puts it away with his game-winning rushing touchdown. Quick recap of the top scorers in this one. Darren Waller, a huge day. 9 catches, 150 yards, and a touchdown. Got you 30 points there. Justin Herbert balled out, even without his top two receivers being very active. 314 yards, 2 touchdowns, 14 rushing yards, and a touchdown on the ground for nearly 28 points. Marcus Mariota, as we mentioned, 226 passing yards, a touchdown, a pick, 88 rushing yards, and a rushing score for almost 26 fantasy points. And then Josh Jacobs, a pretty good day as well, 114 scrimmage yards, 3 catches, and a rushing touchdown, 20 points there. But let's start with Keenan Allen, Florio, because yesterday there was talk about Allen being a true game-time decision, he and Mike Williams, although I think Mike Williams is not rostered or started in quite as many leagues, so was not maybe as pressing. But Keenan Allen, a game-time decision. We saw a video on Twitter maybe an hour or two before kickoff of him running, getting loose out on the field. I think he either tweeted or said to somebody that you guys should start me. So everybody was kind of, all right, wondering what to do. And I know that you and I both felt like it's a huge risk with some potential good reward there if things turned out. I even tweeted, if you feel like you have a better option to start him, but chances are you probably don't. In the end, Keenan Allen plays 23 snaps. He ends up with 1 catch for 17 yards on 3 targets and was really, truly limited by the injury. I mean, look, I don't really know what else to say about it, Florio, other than this is sort of a study in risk versus reward. And unfortunately, in this case, the reward was not great enough for the risk that people incurred. I guess that's kind of the way I look at it, huh?
Yeah, I was struggling with it all day yesterday. I ended up settling with him at wide receiver 20 in the rankings when it was announced that he was going to play. But just like you, I put it out on Twitter. I said, listen, if you start Keenan Allen tonight, understand the risk. Like, he could play the decoy role. He could be very, very limited, which he was. Like, I never would have guessed that Mike Williams would have played more snaps, ran more routes than Keenan Allen, but he did. Like, Keenan Allen was just not healthy and not good to go last night. But it's like you said, Marcus, it's the lesson in risk reward, because if a lot of people sat him and then he went off and, you know, had 10 catches, 100 yards and a touchdown, which is very possible for Keenan Allen, like, fantasy managers would have been angry for the other reason today. So it's just whenever a player is limited or dealing with an injury and they play and they're a game time decision like this, I think it's the worst case scenario for fantasy. I'd almost rather you sit then give me limited 50% of the snaps or something like that.
It is why, and you know, we didn't talk about it, but like Julio Jones, for instance, has been ruled out this week. That takes the worry out of your hands. You know, you just have to sit Julio Jones and just be done with it, as opposed to trying to figure this thing out. I also, and I thought about this late last night, part of the reason a lot of folks are feeling some kind of way about it today. And by the way, don't tweet at Keenan Allen. I guess people are doing that now. I know Ken and Drake had a little bit of a Twitter rant about that the other day as well. Leave the dude alone, man. He doesn't care about your fantasy team, and he doesn't really want to hear it. He knows he had a rough night. He knows he's not completely healthy. Leave him alone.
He could have tweeted that he wasn't going to play at all and then played.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Huh. I don't know anybody who's done that lately. Huh, interesting. Part of the reason I think people really feel some kind of way about it is it's twofold. One, it comes in week 15. It is in the fantasy playoffs where all of your performances are certainly magnified. On top of that, it was an island game. So everybody was watching. Everybody could see it. If this same game happens in the middle of the 1 o'clock Eastern slate, the 10 a.m. Pacific slate, where there are, you know, say five or six other games happening, sure, it's a story. Sure, people are frustrated and talking about it, but you don't have the whole eyes of the nation on it to see what happens here. It gets a little bit more buried. So I think it was a situation where this was kind of a perfect storm of frustration for a lot of people. And, you know, I don't have any advice for you other than, you know, it sucks. It happened at the worst possible time, but that's part of the reason that really at its base, at its very core element, fantasy football is always going to be a little bit of gambling. So there it is.
The one thing I would say to the Keenan managers, Marcus, is you're probably not playing in week 15 without Keenan anyway. So
true.
He got you here.
Very true. Very, very true. Plus, you know what? There's still some other games left to be played. Who knows? Who knows what happens? Somebody out there is going to get through to week 16 with Keenan Allen on their roster. Why can't it be you? Elsewhere, Darren Waller, another fantastic game. As I mentioned, 9 for $1.50 and a touchdown. I asked Adam Rank this on Wednesday, and I want to get your thoughts on it. Is Darren Waller, should we start to talk about him among the elite fantasy tight ends? Has he reached that plateau quite yet?
Yeah, for me, he has. Like, every week when I do the rankings, I started Travis Kelce, Darren Waller, matchups be damned. Like, they are just that good. And we could say the Raiders don't have a wide receiver one. They do. He just plays tight end. Like, he gives you that good of production each week. Last night, 30 fantasy points. 3 weeks ago now at this point, 45 fantasy points. That was the most a tight end had scored since 2002 when Shannon Sharp scored just over 45 fantasy points. And then you look at his other games, like he routinely gives you 15, 17, 21. Like, he has a couple of games in single digits this year. Like, yes, this guy next season, I think Travis Kelce is the unquestioned tight end one. But I think after that, the discussion then will be Darren Waller versus George Kittle as the second tight end off the board.
I came into this season saying that Darren Waller was going to regress, that the Raiders went out and they added a bunch of pass catchers. They went and drafted Henry Ruggs. They drafted Bryan Edwards, who we've seen very little of this year. They drafted Lynn Bowden, who isn't even a Raider anymore. But I really thought with all of these guys coming in that meant the Raiders would spread the football around. Now, because of circumstances in part, that hasn't happened, but also because Waller has been really, really good, still getting a ton of catches, still finding his way into the end zone. And I do think we're going to start talking about him as being, you know, maybe the second or third tight end off the board. I don't think he's going to have these questions. I don't think he's going to have these doubts following him next season, in part because of his ability, in part because it just seems like a John Gruden offense is tailored toward getting his tight end involved and seeing how they're splitting him out wide. They're trying to get him in matchups on corners, and he is beating them down the field. That's reason to believe that this thing is going to last for a couple years, that Darren Waller is not a flash in the pan, that he is a talented player who is here to stay. And so, hey, look, I say it every year, the more tight ends we can get, the merrier. So welcome to the club, Darren Waller. We're glad to have you.
Only they threw to him on third down and not the fullback.
Why Alec Ingold? You have a chance to win the game. You roll out, you take away three quarters of the field, and you throw it to your fullback who, even if he catches it, I don't think he scores. I didn't understand that at all.
My play call would be Darren Waller wherever. Like, Darren Waller, where do you feel most comfortable catching a touchdown here? That's where you line up, and I'm going to throw you the ball.
That just sometimes, look, I'm no footballologist, but sometimes it's simpler than it seems to be made out to be. Justin Herbert, who we were worried about what to do with him. You know, do you start him? Does it depend on Keenan Allen and Mike Williams? Allen and Williams played, although neither one was a major factor in the game. And Herbert still went out and had himself a day, nearly 28 fantasy points for the rookie quarterback. So I was thinking, I was like sketching out a list. Let's put it at QB8 in drafts next year. Is he higher or lower than QB8?
I think that is the perfect number for him, Marcus. I think he is a top 8 fantasy quarterback off the board next year. And I would very much so be one of the people drafting him. This was the first season I've kind of changed my approach at quarterback. And I went from, I'll just wait as long as I can because I'll get a good quarterback. And I started to think there was real value in the second tier of quarterback, because Mahomes and Lamar, you still had to pay like a second or third round price for. But then once you got into like the fifth or sixth round, there was Dak, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson, and Josh Allen were, for me, the big five quarterbacks that in that range I was willing to take, because I thought they were head and shoulders better than all the other remaining, at least in fantasy, better than all the remaining quarterbacks and would give me an advantage. I think Justin Herbert slides right into that group, and then there's still a drop-off after the top eight and the next bunch of quarterbacks. But I, especially if there is a change at play caller next season, and I'm selfishly hoping we see Eric Bieniemy go there, but if we see a change in play calling there, I think everyone is going to get super excited for Justin Herbert, because they have all the pieces to be this next great offense in the NFL.
I was putting the list together last night, and you know, in no particular order, you know, you got Mahomes, you've got Lamar Jackson, you've got those guys you mentioned sort of in that second tier, the, you know, Russells, the Prescotts, Josh Allen, you know, Aaron Rodgers is probably still ahead of Herbert, especially after what he did this year. But I settled on QB8 kind of being the number for Justin Herbert. The only one that I had a question about, you know, whether I slot him ahead or behind, is maybe Joe Burrow. But I think even that is sort of dependent on what the Bengals do with that offensive line, like how healthy he is coming back next season, if they can protect him consistently, because that was a big issue for him last year. But I do think Joe Burrow might be in that mix. But I think Justin Herbert has done enough, and I think the way he bounced back yesterday without Allen and Williams suggests that he is primed to be certainly a top 10, but possibly a top 8 quarterback off the board next season. And look, we went at the start of the year from everybody saying, you know, maybe Justin Herbert gets on the field and I don't know what he's going to do, and now suddenly, Florian, we're talking about him as the top rookie quarterback. I did not envision this turn of events from Justin Herbert this year. I don't know if you did.
No, I did pick him up in a whole bunch of leagues after his first like good game, but I'd be lying if I said I expected anything like what he's given us. Even when I was picking him up, I was just like, all right, I think it, oh no, the issue was I had a Josh Allen in a lot of leagues, and he had like Tuesday game, and Herbert was on Monday. So I added him everywhere. But I definitely did not expect what we've gotten out of Justin Herbert. It's been so much fun, really, for fantasy.
Yeah, it's been absolutely great. So looking forward to seeing what he does next year. I mean, I know this year still has a couple games left, but curious about what happens for him next year. All right, today's show is sponsored by DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. DraftKings has millions of dollars in total prizes up for grabs, so download the DraftKings app now. Use code TEAM during sign-up. Start feeling the sweat like never before. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Time to ask some of our big questions for week 15 as we get deep into the semifinals of most fantasy playoff leagues. First one, Russell Wilson had his get-right game last week against the Jets. No real surprise there. But this week, it's a whole different animal when he takes on the Washington football team. They have been pretty tough all year long. Chase Young just destroyed the 49ers almost single-handedly last week. So how worried should we be about Russell Wilson this week?
I guess worried enough to take him, for me, to take him out of the top 5, but not worried enough to take him out of the top 10. Like, he is my QB7. I think if you have Russell Wilson, you're still starting him. I get it. The matchup on paper is scary, but Russell Wilson is still one of the best quarterbacks in football. And it's not like Washington, you can run all over them and they're hard to pass on. Like, they're also stingy against the run, so something's going to have to give here. And I'll trust Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf to still be able to put up numbers against really any team outside maybe the Rams, who he always struggles with. But I still am starting Russell Wilson this week if I have him.
That's sort of my take. And it is one of those things where we talk about it all the time. Who else are you going to find that is going to have as high or higher ceiling than Russell Wilson? And the answer is probably nobody. I mean, those players are probably on somebody else's roster. They're certainly not sitting out on the waiver wire. So you are probably going to start Russell Wilson, and you're going to take your chances against this defense. The hope being that if he does turn the ball over, which he has quite a bit this year, that he figures out a way to make up for it, whether it is through throwing touchdowns to DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, whether it's actually him getting out of the pocket and scrambling a little bit. Because I know that's not as much a part of his game as it was earlier in his career, but he can still get out and get you some rushing yards. So hopefully that sort of hardens the floor, I guess, gives you a little more stable floor this week compared to other weeks. But it is something to be concerned about. I know Adam Rank is definitely very concerned. I know he talked about that on Fantasy Bites, his worry about Russell Wilson this week. But I keep coming back to, where are you going to go? Who are you going to find off the waiver wire that you feel like is going to give you a better opportunity overall? And I am hard-pressed to think that that person exists right now. Other quarterbacks. Mitch Trubisky went out and balled last week. And now this week, he's got a good matchup. He's on the road, but he's indoors against that Vikings secondary that has been awful all year long. How high do you have him in your rankings?
I have him as my QB18 right now. I'm debating moving him up as high as 16. Like I said, quarterback, it's a good week this week. There's 15 guys that I feel like if I have them, all right, I'm okay starting them. Maybe 14 now with Drew Brees. But after that, I have him in a group with like Baker Mayfield, Kirk Cousins, Trubisky. I feel like that is the tier he belongs in this week. Listen, he played great last week. I experienced it firsthand because in that league where Lamar went off for me and put up his season high, Trubisky also was the super flex there and put up his season high against me. So that wasn't a lot of fun. It's a good matchup against him, though, but it's still Mitch Trubisky, and we saw 2 weeks ago against the Lions, he failed to take advantage of a good matchup. So I wouldn't start him ahead of proven commodities, and I also wouldn't start him over guys like Goff, Big Ben, Rivers, or Tom Brady, who also have really good matchups. But after that, I think he is very much so in the discussion. And he's more of a DFS or two-quarterback league quarterback. But I think if you're in those formats, you can use him this week.
Absolutely two-quarterback leagues, I think you're putting him in. I mean, he was the QB6 last week after going off against the Houston Texans, which, look, I get it. It's Houston, and that defense has been pretty bad all year long. But you could say the same about the Vikings. And there's a really – I can envision a world where a lot of folks who, for one reason or another, maybe are unsure about their quarterback situation and will ask about starting Mitch Trubisky. And I do think, look, based on who you have, but depending on who it is, this is not an awful start this week. So it's weird that here we are at the end of the year and we're talking about starting Mitchell Trubisky in a playoff scenario. But 2020 for you. I don't know what else to say about it. But it is not a completely ludicrous idea that people will be plugging in Trubisky this week against the Vikings. Other quarterback talk, Jalen Hurts, as you mentioned earlier, didn't have a great passing game, but ran for over 100 yards, 18 carries in that game, which is a season high for quarterbacks. This week, he's got the Cardinals, who now have a whole game's worth of tape on him. They also get to practice against a pretty mobile quarterback every day in Kyler Murray. What do you expect from Jalen Hurts this week?
So I'm taking like a kind of high upside, but still conservative approach with Hurts. I have him as my QB12 this week, but I think his upside, like he could finish as a top five quarterback this week because what he can do with his legs. Like you said, Marcus, 18 rushes for 106 yards. The only other quarterbacks I think you could compare him to in the NFL right now are Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray. Like, who else can go out on a given week and rush for over 100 yards with ease like Jalen Hurts did last week? And he did it against the Saints, who hadn't allowed a 100-yard rusher in 50 games and hadn't allowed a 20-point performance in a month. So that was such a hard test. I think he passed it with flying colors. And if you have Jalen Hurts, I would start him this week unless you have Hurts and, like, a proven top five or something quarterback. But otherwise, I like Hurts a lot.
I just, I worry that what happens if that rushing number even gets cut in half, right? Because 50 yards is a pretty good game. But that is a kind of a big drop off because I think he is still – developing as a passer. That was certainly one of the things that we talked to Ian Harditz from PFF earlier this week, and he pointed that out. Not that it's, you know, a breaking news item. Jalen Hurts is still developing as a passer, so the potential of the running numbers not being as good sort of worries me. But I guess, look, if you're playing him, you are playing him for the ceiling. You're playing him for what the potential is of what he can do. And the Cardinals, surprisingly, I was sort of surprised, they've given up some rushing yards to quarterbacks, although it could also be because they play in the same division as Russell Wilson. Maybe that has something to do with it. So I think if you're certainly in DFS, I'm playing him. And if you kind of have a fringe QB1 situation this week, then maybe you give him a shot. I just, I am the fantasy skeptic, so I tend to be a little bit more conservative about those sorts of things. So I will watch him from afar and enjoy as a fan. I think I'd be a little nervous, but that's just me. Don't let me completely influence the way you feel about Jalen Hurts. The Bucs, we talked about Leonard Fournette and him getting a lead role there. We have really struggled to forecast their wide receiver group all year long. I've been getting a lot of tweets asking about Antonio Brown this week against the Falcons. For you, where does the wheel of Buccaneers receivers land this week?
For me, it lands on Mike Evans, and that is kind of me admitting a fault, because coming into the season, I was very low on Mike Evans, and then early in the year when all he was doing was giving us like 30 yards and a touchdown, I kept being like, this is unsustainable, trade him. Like, we were calling him the Jordan Howard of wide receivers, but oddly enough, ever since they signed Antonio Brown, Mike Evans has kind of stepped up and been their number one wide receiver. He leads them in targets per game. He leads them in air yards per game and in fantasy points per game. The only issue is he leads all of them, and he's not even averaging 15 fantasy points per game. Chris Godwin is averaging less than 10 since they signed AB, but I do expect better numbers out of him. And then I think AB is also just kind of like a wide receiver three with a lot of upside, because they will take a couple of deep shots with him. But if I can only play one, I'm going with Mike Evans this week.
I'm just going to keep, you know, hitting the electric feeder bar, and I'm going to go back to Chris Godwin, because he's the guy that I believed in all season long. I thought he was going to be another, you know, have another top 10 finish coming. Obviously, this was before there was any thought that the Bucs were going to sign Antonio Brown. And I still just kind of keep waiting for him to get a little bit closer back to where he was. And maybe this is, you know, me, you know, the supposed dictionary definition of insanity, but I just keep sort of believing that this is going to happen. Maybe because I keep looking at Mike Evans' numbers and looking at his production and thinking, like you said, this seems unsustainable, yet he somehow persists. So I feel like against the Falcons, all three of those guys are startable, just because you really never know which one is going to have the big day, and they all have potentially high ceilings. But it just seems that it's worked out that it has been maybe one more than the other. We didn't even factor in the fact that Gronk is starting to get more looks and is, you know, cannibalizing all these guys as well. So it has not been the fantasy bonanza that we anticipated it being. But again, against the Falcons, the matchup is so good that it really is hard to fade any one of those guys in that passing game.
And hopefully with no Ronald Jones and the Falcons run D, like we said, maybe it leads to even more passing, and multiple of these guys can have good games.
That would be the hope. We can certainly hope for that. In Miami, the Dolphins have had a number of injuries, especially in their backfield, to the point that now this has felt like Lynn Bowden hype week. He went out and had a pretty good game last week, and now, you know, we'll see what happens in the backfield. You know, what's up with, you know, guys like Gaskin and Ahmed and what have you. Are you on? Have you bought a ticket for the Lynn Bowden hype train this week?
So I would only use him if Jakeem Grant and Devontae Parker and Mike Gesicki sit, because that's what happened last week, and they kind of started to funnel the targets to him. If one of those guys are active, I think that takes away some of the volume that we're expecting from him. And again, it is a rookie quarterback starting against Bill Belichick, who he dominates rookie quarterbacks. Look at what he did to Justin Herbert earlier this season. I more than likely would stay away from Lynn Bowden this week.
I think he's a deep league play. He's kind of a desperation play. I am not considering starting Tua at all anywhere because of what you mentioned and what the Patriots did to Justin Herbert. I would stay away from Tua, but I can envision him getting the ball out to Bowden a little bit. I know there is some conundrum about what his position eligibility should be. I will know that for our purposes, the Dolphins roster feed that NFL.com uses has him listed as a running back. So that is why in our game he is listed as a running back. So, you know, I've had people asking me, you know, why isn't he listed as a wide receiver? That's it. We use a specific roster feed. Usually you can find it on the team website, but it does have him still listed. And it's, look, it's a whole complex thing. It's not the right, look, I can't even begin to get into it, but I know there's the roster that's on the page. On one page on the Dolphins website, he's a wide receiver. On another roster page, he's a running back. I can't figure it out. You should email the Dolphins and tell them to get it all straight, and then we can come back and work with you. But for now, he's a running back. If you really are that hard up for starting Lynn Bowden, Godspeed. Because I think he's, like I said, I think he's a deep league play. But if we're really going to parse positional eligibility with Lynn Bowden, then maybe it's just better to find another option altogether.
This is Ty Montgomery from a few years
ago. Oh, man. I don't miss those days at all. I really thought it was going to be over after the Taysom Hill debacle. But, you know, there's always one. There's always, always one. Time for Best Value, presented by DraftKings. Every week, we try to give you the most bang for your fantasy buck as we go through some of the best values in daily fantasy. So let's start at quarterback. Where are you going for your value this week?
We've spoke about him already, but I like Jalen Hurts at 5,900 on DraftKings just because of what he can do with his legs. Like we keep going back to last week, he gave you over 10 fantasy points just on running numbers alone. What if this week he can punch one in and find a rushing touchdown as well? I think his upside is really high, so I like him in DFS. But I will say, Marcus, I strongly debated your pick, and in a season-long league, I actually would play it safe and start your guy over mine.
Okay, well, then my guy is at the same price, Philip Rivers. So we go from the young to the old with Phil Rivers, who actually, over the last 4 weeks, is the QB10 in fantasy football. And yeah, at the start of the year, never would have imagined it when the Colts passing game was really nothing to speak of. But I've said T.Y. Hilton can be a league winner. Philip Rivers, maybe not a league winner, but certainly a guy who can get you to a fantasy championship situation. And against the Houston Texans, it feels like a really great opportunity to get Phillip Rivers into your lineup there. Running backs, who is your value running back for the week?
This one, it's kind of gross because we've also spoke about him as well, but it's Leonard Fournette at 4,500. And my thinking was, if you can get a starting running back at sub 5,000, a back who can, you know, hopefully give you 15 touches this week, maybe find the end zone at 4,500. I think it is a play that it allows you to get other higher end pieces in their lineup. But Marcus, running back is another position where I really like your pick as well.
Yeah, I've really kind of gotten on the Gus Edwards train this week, and he's in at 4,400 on DraftKings. Look, what I do love, and I know people have asked about J.K. Dobbins as well, I do think he's a pretty good option. What I'm just most excited about is that it seems like the Ravens have sort of phased out Mark Ingram, that this is now a two-headed running back attack. And I feel like in fantasy, we have learned to navigate a two-headed backfield. It's the three-headed backfields that become a problem, right? It is why, you know, if Malcolm Brown is out of the mix, for instance, in Los Angeles, we feel much better about Cam Akers. It's why Jonathan Taylor is a lot more popular in Indy, because Jordan Wilkins doesn't seem to be getting any work. So Gus Edwards has been very explosive. He has a nose for the end zone, and I definitely like him against that Jacksonville defense. Real quick, we go back and forth on Marquise Brown. The matchup is good. Would you consider him anywhere, daily, season long, anything this week?
If he is active in time, I do like the matchup, but he's a home run hitter or a 5-point play potentially every single week, because he's just been so up and down. But I think this is going to be a week where Lamar and Edwards and Dobbins just run it all game long, because Jacksonville has struggled to stop the run all year. So I'm expecting big rushing numbers from the Ravens this week, not as much in the passing game.
Yeah, I should mention he is on the COVID list, but if he has some negative tests, he could come back and play on Sunday. So that is something to kind of keep an eye on if you are of the persuasion to play Marquise Brown. All right, so that does get us, though, to our value wide receivers. I went with this guy's quarterback, so it makes sense to maybe plug this guy in somewhere too.
Yeah, and kudos to you, Marcus. You were the first person that I heard at least like kind of talking up the resurgence of T.Y. Hilton. And since that point, like since week 12, he's the wide receiver 4 in fantasy right now. And that resurgence started against the Houston Texans, a team that he has dominated in his career. In 17 career games against the Texans, and that is more than a full NFL season, he is averaging over 19 fantasy points per game. He scored 25 against them earlier this year. He's playing really, really well. And this is a Houston Texans team that just last week was shredded by Mitch Trubisky. I think Rivers and his top wide receiver, T.Y. Hilton, are going to get some people into the fantasy championships this week. So why not use him in DFS as well?
I do think we forgot about the whole T.Y. Hilton against the Texans narrative a few weeks ago. And I definitely did. We were reminded right away in that game. I'm going to go Corey Davis, who a little bit more pricey at 5,800. Certainly not going to break the bank here. He's had just a great season. Ryan Tannehill is playing well again this year, certainly exceeding my expectations. But I like what Corey Davis has offered right now over the last 4 weeks. He is the wide receiver 12. I know he did not have a great week last week against the Jaguars. I'm willing to sort of forget that and give him another shot against a Lions defense that just has not had a clue all year long. We know A.J. Brown is going to ball, but A.J. Brown does not give you quite as much roster flexibility with his salary. But Corey Davis, I think, can be just as productive and give you a lot more options elsewhere on your roster. All right. Tight end, the dart throw that is tight end. Who is your value pick for week 15?
Yeah, if you're not going with Travis Kelce, you should be going a lot lower on DFS, at least in my opinion. And I like Irv Smith Jr. this week against the Chicago Bears. Irv Smith returned last week, and we saw him find the end zone. And then he finished with over 16 fantasy points. He has now scored at least 15 in 2 of his last 3 games and double digits in 4 of his last 6. That is a pretty safe floor, and the Bears have allowed the 3rd most fantasy points per game to quarterbacks. So I like Irv Smith this week as a more on DFS, but as a good value play at $3,600.
I'm sort of looking forward to what happens in the offseason with Kyle Rudolph and whether or not they just open the door fully for Irv Smith to be their main tight end. I'm going to stay in the division, and I'm going to go, in fact, on the other side of this very game, Cole Kmet for the Chicago Bears. And it's frustrating because Jimmy Graham keeps popping up and scoring touchdowns every once in a while, even though he's not giving you any real production. But Kmet is starting to get more snaps, starting to get more targets. He's had 7 targets in back-to-back games for the Bears. And you know, at some point, I think this offense is going to start to turn and give him more opportunity. I know we never really get excited about rookie tight ends, but Cole Kmet is playing well right now, and I think he's worth a look, especially at $3,000. I think he's definitely worth trying to slot in somewhere and seeing what you can do around him. Finally, defenses. I thought there were some pretty good matchups this week value-wise for defenses. So who did you pick?
I went with Bill Belichick, not even the Patriots defense. Like, I went with Bill Belichick against a rookie quarterback because he has had so much success. Marcus, I went and looked back, and since he's taken over as the Patriots head coach in 2000, he has faced 25 rookie quarterbacks. They're averaging 9.9 fantasy points per game against him. Like, that is so low. Only 6 times have they even reached 15 against him. So we just see that he makes life really difficult for rookie quarterbacks. They held Justin Herbert to under 5 fantasy points a couple weeks ago. And when you're holding a quarterback back like that, you're going to get a couple turnovers, a couple of sacks. So I'm trusting Bill B here to have another good game against a rookie quarterback.
That's definitely a wise call right there. I'm going to go with the Dallas Cowboys, which I know seems sort of counterintuitive because on the one hand, we have been picking on the Cowboys defense all season long from a fantasy perspective, but Nick Mullins, I mean, it's kind of all I have to say to that. Mullins has been a turnover machine this year. And you know, you look and he's throwing for some decent yards. He's throwing some touchdowns as well, but he will give the ball away. In fact, I believe he's got more turnovers than touchdown passes this season. So I think if nothing else, the Cowboys can get a couple of takeaways. If they can get some pressure and maybe get some sacks as well, it could be a pretty good day. And at 2,700, it's definitely worth the risk of putting them in a lineup and seeing what they can do against that 49er.
So Marcus, is Nick Mullins not better than Jimmy G? Because fantasy Twitter was pretty convinced early on.
That, I know like 6 weeks or so ago, there was that debate. And then was it a Monday night game maybe or Sunday night game where Mullins went out and was awful and pretty much seemed to put that narrative to bed. I think 49ers Twitter has basically decided that none of them are the answer and that it's time to move on. I know that there's a good portion of 49ers Twitter that is really hoping that Zach Wilson from BYU falls in their laps in the draft and they're able to kind of rebuild with him. There are any number of answers that are floating out there, but I think the consensus is that the current answer is not on the roster at the moment. So whatever. All right. That was Best Value presented by DraftKings. Time for Best of the Pack presented by Panini Trading Cards. Every week we break open a pack of cards and we talk about a few of the guys in there. So this week we will start with Kyler Murray, the quarterback of your Arizona Cardinals. At the start of the season, Kyler was lights out. And we were talking about him potentially as the both fantasy and maybe even the NFL MVP. Second half of the season, it has slowed down a little bit, in part because of a shoulder injury, but maybe in part just because the schedule changed or whatever. We can come up with any number of reasons. But the bigger question for you, Florio, is which half of the season is closer to the real Kyler Murray?
Yeah, he definitely has faced some tough opponents in recent weeks, but I am still of the mindset that the first 10 weeks for his first nine games is the real Kyler Murray, because in that span, he had 10 rushing touchdowns in nine games. He had a rushing touchdown in every game but one, and he had over 21 fantasy points in all of those games. And in some of them, we're talking like 38, 37, 29. Like, he had such a high ceiling, but in the last 4 weeks, we've seen him get 20 just once in every other game, less than that. And it's because he's not really running. He had five rush attempts in three straight games before last week, under 50 rushing yards in all of them. He would routinely give you 60, 70. He has a 100-yard rushing game this year. No rushing touchdowns in the last four. And to me, it's all coincided with after he hurt his shoulder, they asked him to run less because they want to preserve him. And it makes sense to me. But I think the real Kyler Murray is the healthy Kyler Murray when he can just run all over you.
That running part is such a big part of his game. And I said early in the season that the Cardinals offense had basically two plays to it. It was Kyler scrambles, Kyler throws to DeAndre Hopkins. And the last month or so, there has been less of the Kyler scrambling part and more of him just trying to throw it to Nuke mildly successfully for the most part. So I think that you're right. What we saw early in the year is more akin to what we should expect from Kyler. At some point, though, the Cardinals do have to figure out the rest of their wide receiving core. Christian Kirk has been incredibly inconsistent. Andy Isabella, I know he's a big fan, or he has a lot of fans on hipster Twitter, fantasy hipster Twitter, but he just has not been productive enough, I think, to really be a big deal. And this is probably the last we're going to see of Larry Fitzgerald once this season is over. So, Kyler's rushing ability is great, but at some point they do have to get him some help beyond just Nuke Hopkins in terms of throwing the football if they want the offense to be a little more well-rounded. All right. This is next a player maybe after your own heart, Florio. It is Cole Beasley of the Buffalo Bills. He came in to week 15 as the wide receiver 22, which was definitely a surprise to me. 71 catches, 838 yards, and four touchdowns. Is this season real or is it a mirage? I mean, is this what we can expect from Cole Beasley, say, in the next couple years?
I think this season is real. If it's what we can expect, I think it depends on what the Bills do at wide receiver. But if they go into next year with the same three wide receivers, I very much so think that he is a draftable wide receiver. He'll be a reserve round wide receiver. Like, you won't have to draft him as one of your starters. But I wrote about him last week in the Sleepers article, and I said I don't think he's getting enough recognition because he's been a good wide receiver, and not good in the sense that he's been good in the past. Like, oh, he'll catch a big third down catch and get you a first down or something like that. But like, he's been a useful fantasy piece this year, and he gives you a safe floor of like 9, 10 fantasy points every week, which has value, but then his ceiling is much higher. We've seen him top 25 fantasy points multiple times, and it's just, he is a safety blanket for Josh Allen. Like, Josh Allen loves to go to Stephon Diggs, but when Josh Allen starts to feel any pressure near the line, he's looking Cole Beasley's way and going to get the ball out of his hands quickly. So I think that Cole Beasley, I think it's real right now.
last year, I looked at Cole Beasley as he was kind of a matchup-based guy. And you know, last year on Fantasy Live, I did a segment called Slots of Fun. And when the matchup was right, there were a couple times I did pick Cole Beasley, and he would have some good games. But he has been a lot more consistent this year. You look at what he's done. He's got more catches than DK Metcalf. He has more receiving yards than Robert Woods. I mean, these are guys that we love and that we plug in each and every week. And, you know, depending on the category, Cole Beasley has outperformed them there. Now, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that you're going to draft Cole Beasley over DK Metcalf next year. You're probably not going to draft him over Robert Woods. But I do think we have reached the point where maybe he deserves a little bit more respect. And you are correct. If the Bills don't do anything drastic with their wide receiver group next year, then I do think you're going to see a lot more people start to buy in to Cole Beasley. All right, last one. Tua Tagovailoa for the Miami Dolphins. We have talked a couple times on this show about his matchup this week against the Patriots. Does not seem great because rookie quarterbacks against Bill Belichick is generally not a good deal. He's been okay so far this season. I think he's been better the last couple of weeks. Is he a draftable quarterback come 2021?
I think yes, but probably not by me. like I like a quarterback who can give you points with their legs and just has like high passing ceilings. And I don't think Tua, at least as of now, like he did impress me last week with what he did against the Chiefs, keeping up with Patrick Mahomes, but their defense had a lot to do with that as well. He's finished as a top 12 fantasy quarterback once. He hasn't thrown three passing touchdowns in a game at all. He hardly tops 250 passing yards. So to me, I think that people are going to talk themselves into Tua, I think, because of the hype that he brings, just the presence his presence brings that we've been hearing about him for years. I think people will get really excited about him because he's a good real-life quarterback. I'm just not certain he has that, you know, like top five fantasy ceiling. So for me, I won't be the one drafting him if that's the case.
I probably won't either. I think he's a guy who, you know, certainly if I'm, you know, if I'm a guy who drafts two quarterbacks or if I'm in a two quarterback league, maybe I take a dart throw on him at, you know, with one of my very last picks. But, you know, if I'm just going to draft one quarterback, it's probably not going to be him. So I can envision next year that he's probably going to be off a lot of draft boards. You know, maybe people who are kind of swinging for the fences and hoping for some upside will take a shot at him. But I haven't seen enough from him to warrant giving him a shot. I don't think he's been terrible. I think he's been just fine. But I think when you talk about the depth at quarterback, and look, let's be honest here, right? Next year, Joe Burrow is going to be back. Trevor Lawrence very well could be somewhere in the National Football League. I know Justin Fields is a guy that's getting a whole lot of attention, and we'll see what happens with him. So there are also going to be some incoming guys that people are going to take some shots at just for the potential upside. So I think Tua is a nice option, but I don't think he's going to get drafted in a ton of fantasy leagues in 2021. All right, that was Best of the Pack, presented by Panini Trading Cards. In case you haven't caught Fantasy Game Day this season, it is not too late. We have another edition coming up for you on Sunday. You can find it at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific time on NFL.com, streaming on the NFL apps and at YouTube as well. And that's where Michael F. Florio is answering your questions. It's me. It's Florio. It's Adam Rank. It's Kimmy Checks as we take you right up until kickoff with starts, sits, and actives, all the good stuff that you need to know, especially for these playoff weeks. So if you haven't checked it out, be sure to check it out. You only got a couple more episodes left before the season is over. All right. Every week we do Ask a Nerd, where we talk to our resident nerd, Matt Okada, and he digs into some questions that we have on our mind. This week, the question we are thinking about is, what are some of the top single game fantasy performances in NFL history? And this is what our nerd had to say.
Thanks, Marcus. This week on Ask a Nerd, we're breaking down the best single game performances in fantasy playoff history by position. Instead of our typical top five list, we've got the number one quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, and even fantasy defense. Without further ado, here's the list. Starting at quarterback, the top prize goes to Aaron Rodgers in week 16, 2018. In a high scoring affair against Sam Darnold's Jets, Rodgers threw for 442 yards and two TDs and added 32 yards and two scores on the ground for a total of 42.9 fantasy points. Representing the RBs is Chiefs star Jamaal Charles in Week 15, 2013. His 59.5 fantasy points in this game are actually the most by a running back in any week, thanks to a whopping 8 catches, 215 total yards, and 5 total touchdowns. Our number one wide receiver just barely edged out Charles's fantasy total with 59.9 fantasy points in week 16, 1995, and it was the GOAT himself, Jerry Rice. Rice had 14 catches, 289 yards, and 3 TDs, nearly cracking 60 fantasy points for the second time in his career. The top tight end is another Hall of Famer, Chargers legend Kellen Winslow, with 14 catches, 162 yards, and 3 TDs in week 15, 1983. Winslow totaled 48.2 fantasy points. Incredibly, that's still 9 points short of the all-time tight end record set by Winslow himself 2 years earlier. And finally, the one you've all been waiting for, the DST award, is a tie. Both the 2002 Texans and the 2012 Seahawks managed to post an incredible 41 fantasy points in their respective Week 14 games, with Houston scoring 3 defensive TDs and Seattle racking up 8 turnovers. Here's hoping that someone on your roster breaks onto our list in your semifinal matchups. Until next time, I'm Matt Okada, and may the fantasy points be with you.
Thank you, Matt. Good stuff as always. One of the takeaways I had from at least watching that video was, I guess back when Kellen Winslow Sr. played, you only needed to get 1 foot in to score a touchdown. It looked like one of those catches. You only got 1 foot in bounds. And the second one,
I noticed that as well. I was like, that wouldn't have been a touchdown.
So like that doesn't count now, but it counted back then. So good for him. Great stuff as always, though, from Matt Okada. We appreciate it. It led me to think, though, if you had to pick a player this week that could single-handedly get you into the fantasy championship, who would it be?
For me, it is Tyreek Hill. And remember early on in the year where we were like, yeah, Tyreek Hill is scoring touchdowns and he's giving us safe production, but he's not really having those blow-up games? That was fun because since week 9, Tyreek Hill is averaging 32 fantasy points per game. Devontae Adams is the closest player at 26. So that is a huge advantage. And in that span, he's averaging 13 targets per game, over 160 air yards per game, just huge volume. And he's a touchdown machine. He has 2 games all year without a touchdown. I think the championship round, Marcus, might be a lot of Tyreek Hill teams against the player that you're about to talk about.
Yeah, against Derrick Henry teams. I mean, I have started calling him Mr. December because he's pretty good all year long, but he seems to save his best performances for the final month of the season. He has 4 career 200-yard rushing games. 3 of them have come in the month of December. And then on top of it this week, you can't ask for a better matchup for a running back than this Detroit Lions defense. So I think the Lions are going to see a steady dose of Derrick Henry early and often, and especially if the Titans get a lead. They're just going to let Henry bring the sledgehammer for the third and fourth quarters here and run this thing out. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see a lot of Tyreek Hill teams versus Derrick Henry teams. And if you have both of those guys somehow on your roster, then kudos to you because you are probably going to move on to the fantasy championship. Are you in line potentially to play? Do you have – well, I guess you still have Austin Eckler, so you still have some teams left, right? So you have a chance.
Yeah, I have a couple of teams still left. Unfortunately, in one, I'm facing Tyreek Hill, so I'm very scared about that. But I have one team – both of these teams are my 2 best teams all year, so I'm hopeful that I could still maybe pull out a championship or 2. How about you?
I've got a couple of teams where I'm still alive. I also have a couple of teams where I'm still playing in the consolation bracket for whatever that's worth. So I have like 4 or 5 teams total that are active right now. So, you know, at this point, I feel like once you get in the playoffs, anything can happen. It's all sort of a crapshoot at that point. But to still be playing, it's pretty good. So congratulations to all of you out there who are still playing. Best of luck in your matchups. And one more time before we go, a huge thank you to Eddie Murphy for all the work he has done on this show. We are going to miss you. I wish you the best in all of your future endeavors. In the meantime, for us, that is it. We are done. We appreciate you hanging out with the NFL Fantasy Football Show presented by DraftKings. You know the drill. Tell 2 friends to tell 2 friends. Rate, review, and remember, talk is cheap until you hire a lawyer. Be safe, take care of yourselves, wear a mask, and we will see you on Monday.